Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello everybody, producer Al here. It's time for another TSFP Presents re-release here on the Monday podcast feed, and it's time for another episode of Classic Teams. This time, you get not one, but two classic teams. It's the Real Sociedad and Athletic Club sides which dominated Spanish football in the early 1980s. Remember, for access to our entire archive of TSFP Presents episodes, plus Rincón Cultural, weekly bonus pods and Q&A pods, my paper reviews and access to the TSFP Discord, you can join us over at patreon.com/TSFP.
Hello patrons and welcome to episode 4 of TSFP Presents Classic Teams. This week we're talking about a really, really interesting period of Spanish football and indeed Spanish history. And we're not talking about one, but two classic teams. It's the period at the start of the 1980s when Spanish football was dominated by the Basque teams, Real Sociedad champions in 1981 and 1982, only to then see Athletic Bilbao win the league title in 1983 and 1984. So we had four consecutive Basque champions. We've never seen a region dominate Spanish football like this as Basque country did at the start of the 1980s. Obviously, I was looking back, and in the 1960s, only Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid won the league title. So apart from that, you've never seen Andalusia with a lot more population than the Basque country, or Valencia, or even Catalonia or Galicia. None of these regions have ever dominated La Liga as the Basque country did at the start of the 1980s. We're obviously going to talk about the teams, some of the players involved, some of the iconic managers involved as well. But almost as important as this, or as interesting, is the political and social context of what was happening in Spain at the 1980s, at the start of the 1980s. It was a rather wild time, I think you can say, in all aspects. Anyway, we'll get to that in a moment, but let's start talking about the football and about Real Sociedad winning their first ever league title in 1981. Obviously, Athletic Bilbao had previously won league titles. I think they'd won six before winning it in 1983. Real Sociedad had never won a league title. They won it in 1981. They won it in 1982, and they've never won it since. They came relatively close in 2002, but they've never done so since.
Yeah, and as you say, I mean, part of the kind of the significance of this begins with the beginning of Spanish football. The Basque clubs, in particular, Athletic Club Bilbao, obviously were kind of, if you like, the heart of the genesis of football in Spain. The Athletic Club were the strongest side in those first 15, 20, 30 years. Then obviously post-Civil War.
Why were they the strongest team?
Essentially because
they were founded by Brits.
Well, yes, there is that. And actually that British element, and I'm sure this will kind of be sort of implicit in the background in a lot of what we say, that British element is very much there. And I think it's very explicitly there with Athletic Club, but I think it's kind of implicitly there a little bit even with Real Sociedad, just in terms of the way that the Basque country expresses its football, the way that it lives its football. I think while this might sound banal and daft, I think there is something in the fact that it's climatological as well. I mean, I genuinely think that plays a part in this. This is a part of the country that's cold and wet a lot of the time. And I think that the footballing culture is partly born of that. I mean, for example, watching some of the footage of these two league titles, you know, the pictures are something else. Admittedly, in one of Real Sociedad's league title wins, it's actually one in Gijón, which is another place where it's cold and wet. But there's definitely something in that. And obviously, Athletic also, and this is one of the other things that gets forgotten over time, Athletic are effectively the founders of Atletico Madrid. Now, this is a kind of a branch. These are Athletic Bilbao fans in Madrid who found Atletico Madrid, and they're the teams that Athletic Bilbao are that dominate the start of Spanish football. But then, post Civil War and certainly post Second World War, that's kind of it. That's kind of it until this era. it's sort of almost worth taking this to December 1976, isn't it? When in the Basque Derby, you get Ignacio Cotarabia and José Ángel Iribar, the two captains of Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao, going onto the pitch together, carrying the Basque flag.
That's maybe the most iconic image the history of Basque football. Of course, that was a year after Franco died. The Basque flag at that time was still illegal, technically. Even getting hold of one of those flags wasn't necessarily easy because it had to be done on the quiet. And the fact that they carried out onto the pitch, apparently there were quite a lot of nerves around the decision to do that, because no one knew, like I say, it was illegal. No one knew how the police were going to react, what the reaction was going to be. But like I say, what an iconic image.
Yeah, and part of that process, I mean, this is, you know, a demonstration again, and we've said this a million times, that politics and football don't mix is the old cliche, but it's just not true. They do mix. They're very, very entwined. The connection, for example, particularly between Athletic and the PMV, the Basque National Party, is very, very close. And this is, you know, this is kind of played out a little bit in these four league titles because of the fact that, all right, they're not the first four league titles after Franco dies, but they are the first four league titles as things start to fall in place. So Franco dies in 76, as you say, the flag's taken on the pitch in 75, the flag's taken onto the pitch in 76, the constitution's written in 78, there are elections, but it doesn't really feel like we shift into a kind of a consolidated democratic era until the PSOE win the elections in 82. So this is all, and then of course you get, as we talked about in the last classic teams with the Quinta de Buitre, you then get that kind of explosion of kind of hedonism, if you like, in Madrid in the 80s, which gets played out through that Movida Madrileña. And this is kind of part of that process of people refinding themselves. And then also, it must be said as well, believing that this somehow will be a permanent shift, and it turns out not to be.
Yes. Okay, well, I mean, we can talk more about the social political context if you like now, because it is incredibly interesting. As you said, Spain was a fledgling democracy at this time. And of course, parallel to what's going on the pitch, what's going on off the pitch and around the Basque Country is obviously perhaps the bloodiest period in ETA's struggle. I think 1980 was their most deadly year. Obviously, ETA, you know, the terrorist organisation who killed 890 people, I think it was, during their decades-long struggle and ultimately futile struggle for an independent Basque country. But this was going on, and I don't know, it just, for me, when I was researching this, it just feels like, is it a coincidence? Is there something that we can, is there a thread we can pull at here that Basque football dominated La Liga in the years where ETA was most active? It was, I don't know, there's if there's some sort of correlation there, what do you think?
It's very difficult to know, isn't it? I mean, it's very difficult to kind of find the connection. I mean, you can find the connection in terms of the creation of an environment, if you like, of self-expression, the environment, if you like, of that word in Spanish that probably doesn't have a great English translation, reivindicación. I don't know what you call that. They're kind of, they're trying to make a case. They're trying to set yourself apart. They're trying to kind of step forward, which obviously, I mean, you've got to be very careful about suggesting that, because there is obviously a very significant difference between Basque nationalists
and terrorism.
And indeed Basque independentists and terrorism. Yeah. There's also, when you look at ETA, you look at the process that ETA went through, and of course there's a difference in the way that it's seen and understood and embraced or otherwise by Basque society over this period of time. So in other words, ETA's kind of fight against the Franco regime is seen differently to its fight in the first years of democracy, when it's still not sure which direction democracy will take in. And very, very differently again to its fight in more recent years until the recent ceasefire. And so that sense of whether there is a justification for this armed struggle, and that sense of whether you indulge this or you don't indulge this, I think shifts with time. Because by definition, it depends, at least in part, on who the enemy is, who it is they're fighting against, and that changes.
But it just seemed to me like during this period, there is almost literally a war going on in the Basque Country.
Yeah,
almost. I don't think it's too far fetched to suggest that, because as well as ETA, you've got the GAL as well. You've got the state sponsored terrorist death squads.
Yes.
Who were sent out to kill ETA members, ETA sympathisers, Basque nationalists. So this is literally happening in the Basque Country over this period.
I'm brought to something that Ernesto Valverde said after the 1st of October last year. Now, obviously, let's not create absolutely direct parallels here, but he was talking about the scenes that had been witnessed during that day and the tension and so on. And he said, well, look, some of us have kind of grown up seeing some of this. We've seen some of this thing being in the Basque Country. And it, if you go around, I mean, Bilbao, by the way, is a transformed place. You go to Bilbao now and it feels very, very different to the way it felt as recently as 10 or 15 years ago. I remember the first time I went to Bilbao.
The first time I went to Bilbao,
which will be, I don't know, 95, I think. Totally different to how it feels now. The Guggenheim, which, and I know we've gone off on a slight tangent, but I mean, it's all part of this. The Guggenheim, which was seen as this kind of almost alien object that didn't really fit with the city, has actually been part of a regeneration process that means that Bilbao feels very differently. Now, San Sebastian's a curious one because it's a much more elegant city. In a way, you can look at it and feel like it's a more Spanish city. And yet, it's Basque identity. There's a lot of people in Donosti and San Sebastian who would not thank you for suggesting that somehow it's less Basque than Bilbao, because it's not.
Yeah, they might say that it's in some ways more Basque. And I guess that feeds into something we touched on.
It feeds into the teams as well, doesn't it?
And also in our Regions and Rivalries series, talking about these two clubs and the sort of the battle between them as to which is the best or the best sort of identifier of Basque identity, which is more Basque.
Yes.
I mean, and it is also worth pointing out that almost all the players...
Yeah, no, all of them. Well, this is the point.
All of them. I mean, a few were not actually born in the Basque Country, but then went and became sort of Basque, but all of the players that won these league titles are Basque.
Yes.
All of them.
I mean, this is basically not two teams who happen to play in the Basque Country. These are two Basque teams.
Yeah.
These are, I mean, you know, most of our listeners will know, but it's worth kind of reiterating it. When Real Sociedad signed John Aldridge, which will be in 88, I think. When Real Sociedad signed John Aldridge, he is the first foreigner to sign for them in something like 40 years. And it's significant that they sign a foreigner, not a Spaniard. The first Spaniard foreigner, forgive the terms, but the first Spaniard foreigner they sign is actually Boris from Real Oviedo in 2001. And so this is a team that grasped a Basque identity, which, as we know, Athletic Bilbao have maintained as well, with a certain elasticity to the definitions. But they grasped a Basque identity, and when they felt that they had to break this policy, or when they felt that they wanted to break this policy, refused for the first, well, that would make it 13 years, wouldn't it, 88 to 2001, refused to include Spaniards in that. And so that makes these two... Now, look, you can argue for ages about the rights and wrongs of this, but that makes these two titles very special. As you say, these are two Basque teams.
And also, I think in 3 of the 4 years, they pipped Real Madrid.
On the final day, yeah.
Thing that strikes you, I think, looking at these four seasons as a whole, is how tight and how close it was. The biggest points gap in these four seasons was 2 points. It was 2 points one season, it was 1 point one season. The other two seasons, they finished level on points at the top of the table.
Yeah.
By the way, incredible.
Very brief point here, 2 points for a win at this stage,
yeah.
not three, which obviously alters that mechanism, because I think one of these titles is one with 47 points.
As you say, when you were level on points at the top of the table at the end of the season, it was done on head-to-head average as well, not goal difference. So, I think it was it in 1981?
In 81, Real Sociedad beat Real Madrid head-to-head 3-2,
yes,
because there'd been a 3-1 game and a 1-0 game.
Yes, so there was not goal difference, because Real Madrid actually had a better goal difference. But yeah, so...
And that title is amazing, that final day. I mean, that's probably, of all the stories to tell in kind of footballing and human terms, that's one. And I've actually brought this photograph along. Now, I realise that this is a podcast and our listeners can't
see this photograph. We can post it.
I'll post it. Okay, yeah, that's a good idea. This is a very famous story. And this photograph is Juanito. Juanito is walking off the pitch on his knees at Valladolid. Because he had promised that when Madrid won the league, he would celebrate it by walking off the pitch on his knees. He is walking off the pitch on his knees, getting to the touchline. I mean, this photo actually shows him about, what would you say that is, 30 centimetres from the touchline, about to get there, and that, with 12 seconds to go in the other game, this is Real Madrid winning at Valladolid. They had to win and Real Sociedad had to lose. Real Sociedad were playing Sporting. They were 2-1 down with 12 seconds to go. Real Sociedad equalised. Juanito finds out as he's going off the pitch celebrating that the league has been taken from them. That late, late goal. And it just, I mean, the footage, by the way, is extraordinary. The footage of the celebration, the footage as well, and of the two leagues, of Atocha. I mean, obviously, the first one is one in Gijón at Molinón. But the footage at Atocha, I mean, that is 1980s all over.
And what a way to win your first ever league title. Real Sociedad were only top that first season for the last four rounds. In fact, on match day 25, they were seventh in the table. That's how late it came.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, as I say, Juanita goes off. They're winning. They're winning. They think that they know that that Real Sociedad are losing 2-1 in Gijón. Juanito hears. Bear in mind that, you know, this is pre-internet, this is pre-phone, this is radios. You know, information from radios coming in a little bit broken. Juanito gets wind of a third goal for Sporting. He thinks it's 3-1 up in Gijón. It's not. It's 2-1. And then you get Perico Alonso, father, of course, of Xavi Alonso, to Zamora. Zamora scores the goal. Zamora's got also. I mean, this is another thing about this. These photos are partly brilliantly iconic because they look so 80s and they look so Basque.
Yes.
And Zamora's got that great Basque moustache. He, by the way, Zamora and Satrústegui, the two of them who look identical to each other. It's great. You look at a photo. They are Julian Lopetegui's heroes as a boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
They also scored against England at Wembley in 80 or 81, I think.
Okay.
How about that? Yeah.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
So that was the 80-81 finale. The finale in 81-82 was pretty special as well because that involved Real Sociedad beating Athletic.
Yes.
At Atocha.
And
on the final day of the season.
On the final day of the season.
Winning 2-1, they were 2-0 up and it was relatively comfortable. I think then Manu Sarabia scores quite late. Manu Sarabia is another father and son thing, whose son is now the assistant coach of Quique Setién at Real Betis.
Yeah.
Eder Sarabia. Yeah.
That's
Eder Sarabia. So there's this kind of, anyway, that's a sort of a bit of a tangent, which is very much what we do.
No, but I think it shows, you know, that how much of a legacy
and I think in a Basque country, almost more than anywhere else, there is that idea of Eita. There is that idea of it threading through. And there's a lovely interview, by the way, of Luis Arconada, legendary Luis Arconada, the Real Sociedad captain and goalkeeper, and played for Spain, of course. And there's an interview of him holding his son in his arms, talking to TVE, and his son is 3 years old, and they say to his son, "How old are you?" And he says, "Un, dos, tres." He says, and what do you play at? And he says, "Portero, Churi Urguin." And that son is also Luis Arconada, who's now the director of communications at Real Sociedad. So even though he didn't make it as a player, you know, this kind of culture is very definitely played through in the Basque country. And very brief aside here, if you get the chance to read Football of Fathers and Sons by Galder Regueda, who works for the Fundación at Athletic Bilbao, it's a wonderful book about that relationship between fathers and sons. And it feels very Basque, and yet obviously a lot of what he tells is universal. That's by the by. So that second title, there was a very clear sense going into the game that Athletic Bilbao's players weren't going to deny Real Sociedad this title.
Mm.
This tells you something about that Basque relationship.
Mm.
And that when they won it, Athletic Bilbao fans celebrated this as well. Maybe not to the extent of actually going onto the streets and going crazy, but there was a real sense that this is all of ours. This is for the whole of Euskadi. This is the whole of the Basque country. And I think that was replicated when Athletic Bilbao then went and won it in 83 and 84. And I think this is the point. This is why we've done two teams together. It is those two teams together when they start. Now, that relationship's not as good as it was.
No, but also,
but back then it really was.
But I think that plays into the actual social, political context
absolutely
of the time as well.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does, yeah.
The players you mentioned Arconada and Satrústegui. I mean, they were...
López Ufarte as well, who was... They had probably the best...
Zamora.
The argument was, I mean, obviously, you know, go back and try and find others, but the argument was that they possibly had the best left wing that anyone in Spain had had for many, many years. They were extraordinary on the left-hand side.
And they were one club men
as
well.
Yes.
Through and through. All right, 1983 then, Athletic Bilbao win the title in another pretty dramatic final day as well. Again, it was...
Again, it's Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
And that, you're right, that's part of it. Yeah. That is part of what makes it symbolic. It's beating the capital.
Of course it is.
And Madrid had led for most of that season as well and ended up losing the league by just the 1 point.
I believe that's the season when Madrid lost everything. Like, I think they got to... I think I might be wrong in saying this, but I think they got to...
It was
Copa
Aberdeen, didn't they?
Copa del Rey final and lost it. Lost the league on the final day, and they lost it to Aberdeen in the Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling they might have lost the Super Cup final as well that year. They that was a team when they came second in everything.
They only needed a draw on the final day against a struggling Valencia side, but they didn't manage to. And an Athletic beat Las Palmas. They came from behind to beat Las Palmas on the final day and win their league title with... their seventh league title, with Javier Clemente as manager.
Javier Clemente, 32 years old. Can you imagine doing that at 32?
That's why he's still around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look back and think he shouldn't still be around, Javier Clemente. I mean, these days he's mostly around having a go at people. Yeah. He was always a bit bonkers. He was known as El Rubio de Baracaldo, the blonde from Baracaldo. And he was... Well, I mean, even then, he was kind of pugnacious and aggressive. And the way that he played, which he always... And we come back to something we said earlier. He always likened to an English style. And Clemente is someone who very, very much likes British football. That the idea was that it would be two central midfielders that would protect the back four, that you would open the pitch up and play with wingers, but that you would fundamentally be quite direct. Clemente, of course, was a person who effectively coined the term tiki-taka, but coined it as a criticism. It's like, so that was basically what he said. And the alternative is what's kind of almost become known as patapum pariva, which is boom, bish, bosh, bash the ball up there.
The English way.
The English way. And that was kind of what Clemente was, even though bizarrely to start with, the English way back in the 20s and 30s was to pass the ball to each other, whereas it used to be you just take it in terms of dribble. And Clemente was pugnacious, was feisty, possibly less so than he later became, and certainly different. You know, I mean, he has become a bit of a kind of a worn out record over the years, but at that stage he was a totally different character, almost Mourinho-esque, I suppose, to what had been seen before.
He led them to another league title in 1984, their eighth. Again, a very dramatic final day with Real Madrid and Barcelona and Athletic Bilbao all being able to be crowd champions. And indeed, on that final day, they all were mathematically champions at some point in that in that day before it was a 79th minute winner. There we go, for Athletic Bilbao against Real Sociedad.
That's 11 minutes to go. That's against boring, isn't it? Yeah, 11 whole minutes to go. It's really dumb. But yeah, as you say, against Real Sociedad. Against no bitterness at them winning it. In fact, a celebration of the fact that they won it. It's curious as well. I mean, we talked a lot about the confrontation with Real Madrid and how that helps to symbolise all of this. But at this stage, and it didn't last very long, but for two or three years, there was a creation of a really, really bitter rivalry between Athletic Bilbao and Barcelona, which of course culminated in that absolutely brutal Copa del Rey final. And brutal's not a word I like using, but in that case it's absolutely accurate.
That footage was doing the rounds on Twitter the other week, and I can't remember who posted it originally, but if you haven't seen that footage of the brawl that breaks out, I mean, check it out, because it's like nothing you've ever seen on a football pitch before or since, really.
And of course, this feeds into, it might sound again like we're going off on a tangent, but it's not quite a tangent. This feeds into, in a way, what that Athletic Bilbao team were. And of course, famously, Goikoetxea broke Diego Maradona's leg and put his boot in like a kind of a glass case. And there was this confrontation, this kind of verbal, aggressive confrontation between Javier Clemente and Bilardo. That was this kind of always this kind of, you know, this is... It was nasty, really, really nasty. And by the way, Clemente also fell out with Manu Sarabia, his own player, because Sarabia was this kind of... was finesse and technique and talent, and Clemente was all the time.
So that challenge from Goikoetxea on Maradona, that was in 83, that was the year before, wasn't it? And it was such a bad challenge that initially he was banned for 18 games.
Yeah.
It was reduced to 6 on appeal, but imagine how bad a tackle has to be.
Back then, when you could basically...
In the 80s.
You could kick the shit out of people.
That you get banned for 18 games.
He even got a yellow card for it as well.
Not red.
Just to give you an idea of how bad it was, he got a yellow card.
But yeah, that was what became before, like you say, that was the row that culminated in that Copa del Rey final between Athletic and Barca.
And some of those iconic Athletic Bilbao players, obviously we mentioned Goikoetxea.
The man nicknamed The Butcher.
Yes. The Butcher of Bilbao, Zubizarreta as well in goal. Yeah.
There's some lovely footage actually of when Real Sociedad win the league against Athletic Bilbao, Zubizarreta and Arconada together. This also feeds into this idea that for a long time the Basque Country was kind of the home of great goalkeepers, because of course of Eibar, who we've already mentioned coming on as a captain with the flag. I mean, even Iker Casillas, up to a point, you know, his dad was an Athletic fan, his name given a Basque name, because I got a feeling that Iker's brother might have a Basque name as well, but I've completely forgotten what it is now. Just that sense that there was something about the Basque Country that was different, and at that point even more so.
Absolutely, as we said, in the social political context of the time, there was a lot going on at the Basque Country. And I mean, there was a lot going on in Spain anyway.
Well, I think this is it, and we said this about the Quinta del Buitre team, you know, that this kind of explosion was happening in Madrid as well.
I mean, in February 1981 there was literally a military coup attempt in the Spanish Parliament.
Live on TV.
Live on TV, 200 armed guards with Lieutenant Colonel Antonio Tejero stormed the Spanish Parliament as they were trying to elect a new Prime Minister.
Yeah. Tanks rolling onto the streets in Valencia, people leaving the Basque Country, people literally crossing the border into France, frightened.
Yes, and one of the reasons given for this, obviously there are many reasons for this, but obviously the upsurge in ETA violence and what was going on in the Basque Country at the time directly caused this attempted military coup in Madrid.
And it's certainly, I suppose, obviously, as you say, there's interpretive ways of looking at it. It certainly provided some of the excuse.
Yes.
It certainly provided some of the excuse. And you know, I mean, it's genuinely, the footage is extraordinary. By the way, if you get the chance to read the book, Anatomy of a Moment, is wonderful.
It's about that moment, is it?
It's about the military. It's a brilliant book.
To maybe end on a slightly lighter note, is it worth mentioning how Athletic celebrate their trophy wins?
Yes.
Because most teams have an open-top bus. Athletic don't have an open-top bus. They've got a boat.
A barge, in fact, not just a boat. It's a barge. It's a great big barge, and it's kind of, this is one of the other things, right? You go to San Sebastian, and in particular Bilbao. I think Bilbao more so than San Sebastian, but both of them. You go into a bar, and there will be photographs of the barge on the wall. In San Sebastian, there will be photographs of that Zamora goal. There's a kind of sense that we embrace this history and we keep it there. I don't know about you, but it's very rare that you go into a bar in Madrid and there are football photographs on the wall. Very
depends
rare.
Where you go.
Yeah, yeah. You get in certain kind of football bars.
But there's not very many of them, whereas in Bilbao, certainly, it kind of feels like it's every bar. You know, there is something of an embracing of that. I suppose it's partly because you embrace this because deep down you know it's not coming back. Whereas in 1984, I think they thought it was coming back. I think they thought that, wow, somehow, because of the shift, Franco's dead, society's changed, this is our moment, we're going to keep doing this. And it didn't happen.
Yeah, that barge spent quite a long time unused.
Up, yeah.
I mean, then they brought it out again when they won the Spanish Super Cup. And this tells incredible scenes.
Well, that's the thing. When you see the photos and the video, the number of people lining the banks of the river as the barge goes past, and there's lots of little boats following it along the river as well. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I've got a feeling that when there was some sort of battle over the barge when they won the Super Cup a couple of years ago, because there was some sort of suggestion that the barge itself wasn't safe and it needed to be rehabilitated isn't the right word in English. I don't know what you call that.
Just done up a bit.
Done up a bit. And there was some sort of battle about...
Health and safety gone mad.
Exactly, whether you're allowed to do it. But have a look. Look up the word... what's barge again? Gabarra, no?
I don't know.
I think it's called La Gabarra del Athletic.
Yeah. Okay.
Look up La Gabarra del Athletic on Google, because the photographs are just the whole of the side of the river completely packed. Pretty much where the Guggenheim is now. Obviously, it wasn't then. It's just brilliant.
Yes.
Just that little touch of something different, which, of course, in a way, is the Basque Country in a nutshell.
Yeah, you know, it really is. So there we go. That was us talking about the Basque classic teams of the early 1980s. Go and check out the footage. Go and read up about it as well. It is a really interesting period.
And we'll put
this
one into picture on the thing. I'll take a photograph of it right now.
Yes, we'll put it on the thing. Thanks for listening.
The thing being Twitter, right?
Or Patreon.
Oh, yes, or Patreon,
indeed.
Of course.
So thanks for listening. Obviously, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another programme about another classic team, or maybe two. Who knows? We'll see you then. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.